This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And welcome to another episode of the Spoiler Room. I am your host, Mark the Movie Man, fighting a cold from the convention I was at last week, so I apologize if I sound like a late-night club singer who swallowed a frog. But I have a couple crew members tonight to join us on this interesting discussion. We have Mr. Paul Salzar in the house. Paul, how are you?
I'm riveted.
Thanks a lot. And Tony, how are you today, Mr. Estrada?
I'm doing good, Chuck. It feels good to be a Kingsman.
Awesome. And that is what we're going to discuss tonight. We're going to talk about the Kingsman, and we're probably going to jump into Jupiter Ascending reluctantly. But the Jupiter Ascending came out 2 weeks ago. Kingsman came out this past weekend, which is why it is first on our list. Now, Paul, do you want to give a summary of the Kingsman?
Yeah, it's basically kind of your spy type of movie where this society called the Kingsmen, which is a secret society of, believe it or not, started out as tailors. They decided that they needed to protect certain people that they used to tailor clothes for. So they formed an organization which is supposed to be independent of all government interference, basically. Right. And so they form this group called the Kingsmen, and essentially what happens is that they're looking for a replacement for one of their spies who gets killed early on in the movie. And so they run through these tests to find the next spy, and then they introduce a villain named Valentine, played by Samuel L. Jackson, and he tries to essentially cure the world of humanity, which is this virus. And so he sets things in motion. There's kind of like a countdown, which you expect in a spy thriller. And then the spies have to go and save the world.
Excellent, excellent summary. Now, I didn't know much about the graphic novel when it came out, so I kind of went into this cold, but I remember seeing a trailer, and when I saw there was going to be a Red Band trailer for it versus a PG-13 trailer, it instantly caught me. Tony, what'd you think? Are you happy that it got an R rating and so they could kind of let loose?
Yeah, I was fine with the R rating, but the thing with me is that even if it was PG-13, I would still be excited just because of the overall concept. Like, the concept intrigues me. So PG-13 or R, it really didn't matter because I was still going to be interested in seeing the movie either way.
Sure. And Paul, what about you? Were you happy to see an action film with an R in front of it?
Oh, definitely, because I hope it encourages movie makers to be less afraid of the rating. Make the movie you want to make, and then worry about the rating. Don't try to make a PG-13 movie, everyone's going to watch it.
That and the fact that it was actually more successful than they expected. It made $35 million at the box office. Now, 50 Shades eclipsed that by making more than double, but still, you have two rated R films at the top of the box office. Doesn't happen too much anymore nowadays. So I was kind of happy to see that because hopefully, like you said, it does make filmmakers want to make the story they want rather than try to whittle it down for that coveted PG-13 rating. Now, the rated R rating is much deserved in this. And let's first start off how this film opens. We get a credit sequence in here. Did that surprise anyone?
I loved it. I thought it was creative. It was fun. It got me interested. It was like, oh, neat. Well, look at the words come falling down on you. It was really neat.
Yes. You know, I saw it in 2D and not 3D, but still, it was an interesting way to do the credit sequence because as they exploded pieces of the castle, the pieces fell down, and then they formed the name of the person in the credits. And I just caught me off guard because you don't realize how often you're missing a credit sequence nowadays in any film, you know, much less a film like this that's an action film that really kind of wants to dive into it right away, you know. So for me, I like the credit sequence. Did you like the credit sequence there, Tony?
Oh, hell yeah, man. As soon as the movie started, you're seeing all these production logos, and I'm all like, fuck yeah, Kingsman is starting. And then the movie opens with the helicopter shooting the castle, and you're seeing all these words coming out, and I'm all like, wow, that's unique. As far as the movies I've seen, I haven't seen something where you see them shooting, and then all of a sudden you see these turn to words. So I
Well,
thought it was very creative how they did it. It instantly caught my attention as soon as the movie opened.
and I think it also helps set the tone for the film. You know exactly what type of movie you're getting into with that credit sequence. You realize this isn't going to be exactly a completely serious type of film with that credit sequence, wouldn't you say? It kind of sets the tone. And then we're introduced to a number of characters, but Colin Firth. Let's talk about him for a moment. This is the man who, I believe, he won an Academy Award for The King's Speech. Did you ever picture him doing a movie like this?
Oh no.
Go ahead, Tony. I mean, this guy's usually kind of prim and proper, and man, in here, he's badass. What was your opinion on Colin Firth's character?
Colin Firth's character, he was very interesting, and like you said, him kicking ass, it was something new. The last person you would ever expect to see in a movie where he's kicking some ass is Colin Firth. Yet for a concept like this and for the overall story material, I gotta say the casting for Colin Firth was perfect. If he plans to do more action movies in the future, I say Colin Firth, please go for it. I want to see you do more ass kicking, So it felt really refreshing to see him just kick some ass and just go all out because you could tell on screen that he was just embracing the role. He's saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a badass and I'm gonna kick some fucking ass, motherfucker."
And he does kick some ass, I will say. Paul, did Colin Firth's casting surprise you?
It did, but it's still, he was very, very British to me, which I think was important for this film. And I read in the trivia that he did most of his stunts, believe it or not. So, and he got ready for the part, which I like to hear. I love when actors just do months and months of pre-work to get ready for films.
Yeah, it was. I read on IMDb it was 6 months he had to actually work out for this part.
And it's and it shows. And it, but again, he was very British about it, and I thought that really helped the character. The way he handled the umbrella, the way he did, the way he stood, and the way he like was able to flip things around with objects and stuff like that, especially the umbrella. Made me think of the Avengers, the British Avengers.
The British Avenger,
The
Avenger.
Birth of
Yeah,
Avengers.
the and not that movie one, but the
The le lesser known one.
right. with him, well, the thing is, this whole film is actually very British, which surprised me in a good way. I'm glad they did, because this, as I likened to it, and a number of other reviewers have said the same thing, and it was kind of funny because I said it immediately after I left the theater. I texted my buddy Scott, and then I looked at reviews after. This is Kick-Ass meets James Bond. This is the Kick-Ass of James Bond films, wouldn't you say? I mean, this really is. It's still British, but it's got that Kick-Ass vibe to it.
Oh, definitely, and it
Definitely, yeah.
takes the genre of spy films and makes it more like the modern day type of thing. It's something that like the younger generation could really appreciate. As much as I loved watching James Bond, for the first time, I think this movie is going to be as popular for that generation or this generation, and for my generation as well. So.
Well, and it's still a satire of spy films, but Tony, this isn't your Austin Powers of parodies at all.
No, it isn't. It's definitely, it has elements of Kick-Ass, when it comes to the heavily brutal, cartoony ultra violence,
Action scenes were awesome.
and then James Bond, and then I don't know if I'm the only one, but when it came to those train sequences, I sort of got that X-Men First Class vibe when it came to the train scene. So I got Kick-Ass, James Bond, and X-Men First Class all into one.
which makes sense since it's Matthew Vaughn directing this, and he directed Kick-Ass and First Class, I do believe, and you can definitely show here. But I liked how, for the most part, they kept it British, because all the quote-unquote good spy films, not even James Bond, are British. Let's face it, you know? So I'm really glad they kept that tone. Now, we've got our villain in here, Valentine, played by Samuel Jackson. What do you think of giving him the lisp, guys? Either one of you.
I didn't like the lisp, but I thought it was funny. I did. It gave his character a unique, a different look. I heard that Leonardo DiCaprio, I almost said it wrong.
DiCaprio?
Yeah, I almost did say it that way. Was trying out for the villain, but I'm glad they picked Samuel L. Jackson, because he is like cool, and he oozes cool, and I think that's what I think they were trying for with that villain, and he was funny. It's just the fact that you don't expect a villain to serve McDonald's food.
That was awesome.
That was great.
But you got a super villain who's afraid of blood.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
He was a flawed super villain. And I liked that. And most of the humor in here is British, but even people who aren't into British humor will catch it, I think. Mm-hmm. 99.9% of the humor. And I'll get to the last 0.1% in a little bit here. But the one character that I love, and love the fact they went that way, is Sophia Boutella's Giselle.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That was the most fun, unique minion character or second-in-command character I've seen in a film in a very long time. Did that surprise you, Tony? They basically have someone with a handicap as a second-in-command badass villain.
Yeah, that was actually surprising to me. I mean, that was something cool just for her to have those blades on her feet. And I mean, when the movie opens with her slicing the guy, you're like, holy shit. But it was really cool the way she was playing with her blades the whole time. And she really fit for being someone second in command. Like, she's Samuel Jackson's second in command, the guy with the lisp, and he did a really good job with the role. But, you know, she got to obviously do more ass-kicking while Samuel Jackson's more focused on his planning. So, yeah, that was really refreshing to see. She was badass, she was cool, and she was definitely unique.
And easy on the eyes, too. I knew what you were going to say there, Tony. Don't admit it. Don't mince words there.
Damn it, you read my mind, Mark. Paul, yeah, I'm not gonna deny it. She was cute-looking. I'm not going to deny that.
What do you think of Giselle, Paul?
She was a phenomenal character. And also, too, she didn't have, like, the flaws that you would expect a lackey to have. And, in fact, it was kind of... You ever watch Kim Possible, that cartoon show?
A little, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
She's like a character where you have the ultimate, the bad guy, you know, which in this case is Samuel L. Jackson's character, and you had her who really understands how the thing should work. I mean, she didn't falter. She knew what she had to do, and she did it loyally.
Yes.
And that was fantastic. You get sick of watching lackeys fail, or even the ultimate bad guys fail because of their lackeys. And she didn't fail because of something that she did wrong. She just happened to be up against a better opponent or a luckier opponent in this particular, you know,
sure.
Situation.
Iggy's played by Taron Egerton, who plays the young agent who is in training, and he ends up becoming the agent, so to speak. But I liked how they did that. There were a couple other surprises. Let's talk about the script for a moment. One, I didn't pay attention too much to the casting, so Michael Caine's character, Michael Caine being in the film surprised me. But they took a couple twists in this, and this is the spoiler room, folks, so we will definitely be spoiling plots here. The first twist was after the badass church scene, which we'll talk about in a minute, they off Colin Firth. Like he's not coming back. Like, oh, they graze. They kill him. Did that surprise anyone?
It depressed me.
But I honestly, even with the way the film had gone, I did not expect that. Paul, did you see that coming at all?
I didn't see it coming, and they, what's even better was that they boldly announced it. This isn't the type of movie. This isn't that type of movie. Bang.
Yeah.
That was perfect way they presented it, and you never expected it. Because you expected him to be the hero.
Well, you expect him to be the Obi-Wan Kenobi to the Luke, which is Iggy's. And, well, they set that up with the scene prior with Iggy actually failing his test.
Yes.
He doesn't actually pass his test at first. It goes to his fellow student, who was pretty badass as well, though I wish he would have had more screen time. But I love the fact he didn't actually win the first time. But it set up his motivation by having Helen Hunt's character actually killed for him to come back and do better.
Mm-hmm. And you know what the funny thing is? When I was watching the trailer, you know, in the trailer, you see Eggsy in the suit. And then as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, okay, when's he going to get in his suit? When's he going to start to be the Colin Firth lookalike? And then it wasn't until, bang, Colin Firth died, he's not coming back, that he gets into the suit, and he's like the young Colin Firth in a way.
Yeah, he looked a lot like a young Colin Firth, too. Yeah. So I think this cast and the characters were great. The script twists were awesome in it. Definitely. I'll tell you one thing that disappointed me as far as the cast goes, and then we'll talk about the action scenes, was Mark Hamill, in all honesty.
Really?
As much as...
Really?
The only thing that disappointed me with Mark Hamill's performance, it wasn't the fact he was in the film. He was doing Joker voice.
Yes, he was.
He was trying his hardest, but he was doing Joker voice. And I couldn't help myself, having grown up with the Batman animated series, but just hearing him talk constantly, I'm just like, quit doing Joker voice, Luke. Just talk.
Just is talk that 0.1% mark? The 0.1%?
That's part of the 1%. I talk about the other one, but that was the one, kind of the one thing that bugged me, was I wish Hamill hadn't done his Joker voice, because Joker is so familiar with me, and it's such an iconic voice he did. It took me out of the film a bit with his scenes, I will admit. So that was a little disappointing to me. Paul, anybody in the characters that kind of disappointed you a bit?
Well, I'm going to back up. This
sure.
might be some kind of a might help kind of ease that pain of Mark Hamill's Joker voice.
Okay.
In the original comic series, he technically was in the comic book as Mark Hamill.
Oh, okay.
And he is the first guy that gets, basically, he's the first celebrity that essentially gets kidnapped killed. So I thought it was interesting to see that there's like, oh yeah, they actually brought him in to do a part. And so
that makes it a little easier. It's just the voice.
Yeah.
I was hoping he didn't have many speaking parts, because I'm like, I'm getting into this film. Please don't. I just keep picturing the Joker, you know?
Exactly.
What about you, Paul, Tony? Any cast that or characters that kind of disappointed you just a little?
In terms of casting, I think everyone does fine. I think what does disappoint me is how much less screen time the trainees get. You get the cliche, typical, the bully, I guess you could say, and then you just get parts of the trainees, and it's like out of nowhere, that's when they're at their final moment of the trainees. You know, there wasn't really any development behind them. There wasn't the moment where the bully and Eggsy are like friends now, or at least they got along. You know, there wasn't really anything like that. It was just like, okay, training, all of a sudden they're done, and there was like really like no interactions between them. I would say that's the thing that did kind of disappoint me about the film.
And I kind of actually liked it that they did a parallel of the origin story and the threat to the world at the same time. That's about the only way you could do it, because you could either do the whole film of them training or the whole world, I think, or you make it a longer film, which people aren't going to like.
Yeah.
So
I didn't like Roxy, though. I thought she should have had a better role or more time.
They could have did better with Roxy, definitely.
Or at least given her more things. The most she did was that space mission towards the end.
Which was kind of cool. I did like Merlin, though. Merlin was just so much fun. played by Mark Strong. So now, going back to the positive, the action scenes in this. One thing this director has proven is he can do action. And folks, outside of all the other action scenes you see in here, you will never look at the song Freebird the same way ever again. Mm-hmm. Folks, church scene, go. Tony, what'd you think of it?
Fucking awesome, fucking brutal, just batshit crazy, man. When I was watching that church scene, I'm all like, holy shit, he just stabbed that guy with an eye. Holy shit, you know, people are just getting beat. You're seeing blood splatter everywhere. It was like a freaking apocalypse inside a church, and it was inside the church, the last place you would even dare fight inside. So in a way, they were kind of ballsy doing that. But I would say out of all the action sequences, and you know, there are plenty of violent moments, but I definitely would say the church scene was the most violent scene out of the whole movie.
And they set it up beautifully. And the church, in all honesty, though, they do set up that it's a hate group church. So it's not exactly your normal church. Paul, the church scene.
I loved the action. You constantly were looking at, oh, what's happening in the background? Because there was stuff going on in the background, too. And then just the juxtaposition of, like Tony said, was about these people in church, this violence happening in it, and all these people, everybody going at each other was phenomenal. And then hearing that like peaceful Leonard Skinner type music, it just made you... It felt good to laugh at that point, you know? You felt good about doing it.
Well, and then you felt good, but also it kind of made you realize, you know, our hero, the guy that you've loved up until this point, the guy who kicked some ass in the pub, the guy who's been showing Iggy the ropes, he's killing technically innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
And brutally, I might add. Now everybody's killing each other as well, but still, here we
and
have.
And he felt very disgusted about it afterwards.
Here we have a main hero, which is why he gets killed. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, the only way you can accept his character after he does that in the church is if you kill him. Disagree or agree?
Agree.
Excuse me.
I would go ahead and just say agree.
Because, I mean, he does brutally murder a number of people who, if it wasn't for the bad guy, he wouldn't have killed these people. They are kind of, even though they're a hate group, they're still, you know.
But it also shows how much restraint he has had through up that point, because you knew that he was very destructive or he could be destructive, but right. You never saw it to that level until that moment. And so it actually added to, for me, it added this level of, wow, he actually did restrain himself, and this is him letting go.
Right. Well, and the way they shot that scene, too. I mean, long, continuous takes, the swooping camera, you didn't get a whole lot of cuts in there.
I heard it was one take, one whole take.
Really? Oh, and they edited the
pieces. They edited all the pieces, yeah. They had all the cameras,
wow.
That's what I heard.
Wow, that I would love. Hopefully when the Blu-ray comes out, we can see just the one whole continuous take, because that would be pretty badass right there.
We should, once the movie comes out on Blu-ray, we should all come together and do at least a commentary on that church scene.
Oh, nice.
We might have to do that. So we'll look into that. Now we'll move ahead here to the end. Here we have Iggy getting revenge for the death of his friend. And the thing that got me at the end, and it got my buddy Scott, too, was up until this point, even with the church scene, even with the brutal, violent scenes you had, there was just a touch of British class to it. Until you get to the blonde saying, will you do me in the ass?
Yes.
And then there's the scene afterwards where we get to see her ass.
How else would you end the film?
Yeah, it's all like... It's all like, after all that, Matthew Vaughn's all like, okay, let's just end it with the S. All right, I'll zoom in. Okay, the movie is over, people. Let's have lunch.
It might be poking fun at James Bond directly there, saying, you know, he was always this macho type of guy. Well, what's more unmacho than getting it in the ass?
Well, but what got me was that they didn't need to do it that way. And I talked with Scott Menzel from Wheel of Film on it, and I'm like, it almost felt like they've put that in there for American audiences, because stay with me. Here's how I picture that scene actually going. He's hiding out by the blonde. They're coming. And he says, if I rescue you, will you give me a kiss? She drops the line of, no, I'll do more than that if you rescue me. They could have left it at that.
Cut and then they had
doing
to
the action. And then at the end, he's got the champagne. He goes to her room. She's waiting there. She goes up, the door closes, we got Merlin looking at the screen, and we hear the audio, but we never actually see her bare ass, and then we see Merlin's reaction, and he just shakes his head and closes the screens. I think you still could get that joke, you still get the humor, but it stays a little bit more classy. By putting in the actual very direct line, will you do me in the ass, and then showing that later on, in all honesty, for me, it took it down just a little for a few seconds, but it just seemed out of place.
Like, I agree with you. It wasn't really necessary for the movie to end that way, but I guess it ended in a funny way because of Merlin's reaction. But I totally agree. The movie could have ended without, you know, that whole thing happening after he's just done saving the world. So I agree with you there.
And I'm not a prude. If you've listened to this show or seen any of the movies I review, I am far but being a prude. But for the tone that the rest of the film was at, for the level of humor that was there during the rest of the film, for me that felt out of place. What do you say, Paul?
It's just one of those films that doesn't need an ass.
I agree with you that it was not very classy, but again, I stick with the thing that they were poking fun at James Bond.
Yes,
there.
They were, and it did make people laugh in the theater. So, so Kingsman, that's our bit of discussion on the Kingsman. We won't go too further into it. I think we all enjoyed it. I think it gets, you know, a really decent rating for me. I gave it 4 stubs, 4 out of 5. And the 5, again, was just a few of the minor problems I had with it. Didn't ruin the film for me at all. But I'm really trying to go for something, if it's going to get the 5 stub this year, to really wow me. And while this did what was fun and wowed me, there were some elements that took me out of the film. So that's why I gave it 4 out of 5.
Hey, one more thing. I was going to say, if like that scene where Michael Caine told Eggsy to shoot that dog, if it like surprised anyone there.
Oh, it surprised me that Eggsy believed that they were actually going to have him do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I was all like, please don't shoot the dog.
The way they had set up the other tests.
He should have known.
He should have known, especially after the parachute test where everybody had a parachute.
Yeah. That's
he should have known that they weren't going to actually let him shoot the dog. Because everybody did actually have a parachute. So, again, that's another thing where I understand he wasn't the brightest. I mean, well, he was bright, but you would have thought, especially because you look at how old the dog is, the tests that we saw weren't all the tests. Because those dogs grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking, what, 6 months?
Well, they I think there was a scene in there where he mentions that his little sister grew.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it took a while, those tests. They accelerated time there.
So the tests and everything were accelerated time, and the way they talked too about how the bad guy set up the thing with the satellites and everything was over weeks and that. So, but I gave it 4 out of 5. Tony, what was your rating on Kingsman?
Overall, I thought it was a pretty good movie. I really had a lot of fun watching it. While I did have issues with like the movie dragging at points, because I felt like there were times where it took a while to get to the action. And the finale, as much as I did like it, I didn't really get the adrenaline rush, except for that Gazelle and Eggsy scene. That's the only time I got it. But the rest of the finale, I wish it had that more adrenaline rush to it because it didn't give me that, like, what the other action scenes did. And there's a couple more flaws I had, but overall, even with its issues aside, I still had a really fun time with it. And I used the 4 out of 4 star rating in my reviews. So out of 4, I would give it 3 out of 4 stars.
And Paul, what about you, sir?
I gave it 3.6 out of 5. Especially loved the scene where they played Give It Up by Casey and the Sunshine Band. So at the moment of, like, intensity, and they just ended up playing that song, and it just made me happy, and I loved the film because of that scene.
And we were all just happy that we had a rated R action film. So
it'd be 50 Shades of Grey, but it was still a good movie at least.
So everyone go support Kingsman this next weekend. Go out and support it over the week so it can make even more money, and it can make a sequel, because the sequel, I'm sure they'll up the ante a bit with it, but it should be a lot of fun. So that's all we're going to talk about the Kingsman right now. As you can tell, we all loved it, so we won't gush any more about it. Now, the film that not many are gushing about, Jupiter Ascending. Paul, you do so good at these. Did you want to give a summary for Jupiter Ascending?
Oh, I will try my best. All right. It's a film by the Wachowskis. What it is about is essentially what would happen if basically human, or if the universe were basically seeded by corporations. So you get this corporation run by a family, and they find out that the reincarnation of their mother is on Earth, which happens to be her favorite planet, apparently. And so what they try to do is they try to because they're this family that are feuding to try to gain control, and they think that she has the potential of giving them the edge, they either try to kill her outright or try to bring her to them so that she can inherit family's business, and then she can then allow them to rule or not rule. And so you get a hunter, which is played by Channing Tatum's character, or you get him. He's playing it. Ooh, I messed that one up.
No, it's okay. It doesn't really matter, but go ahead.
Played by Channing Tatum, he's essentially becomes the princess's, the Mila Kunis character, is kind of love interest to the film, and he tries to protect her and does everything for this film. So
yes, well done. I would say that you made it actually sound fairly interesting.
and I'm glad Paul did it, because if I was the one doing it, I would have been stuck for like 10 minutes just trying to describe the whole fucking plot. So thank you, Paul. You're a lifesaver.
Well, Jupiter Ascending there, Tony. Your initial thoughts on Jupiter Ascending.
Okay. I don't think it's a bad movie. I just thought it was okay. I don't think it's as bad as some of the reviews describe it to be. There are some good to the movie, but overall, it's very forgettable. You know, I just didn't really like it all that much.
What about you, Bowtie?
I thought that the romance was very uninspired. The dialogue was kind of sappy. But like every kind of Wachowski film that I've seen so far, they're usually good technically. I mean, they make and they push the envelope, which you have to admire. They try to find new ways to make films, but the story doesn't always benefit from them trying to out these new tricks. But I think the one thing that I really liked about it was the family feud, the Abraxas family, the three that are left in charge. Their feuding was probably the most exciting thing in the film for me, with a couple of the action scenes, which I did like.
I'll agree with you. I did like bits and pieces of this film, and Tony, I'll agree with you as well. This film isn't horrible, what bugged me was seeing the potential they had to make this film really good. And I'm going to put something out there. It's a little bit mind-blowing, or at least a little bit controversial. Why the hell did it have to be on Earth? Why? You have the entire galaxy. You guys know what I'm talking about. You have the entire galaxy, and Kane, what has he been spliced with? A wolf. Sean yep. Bean's character, what was he spliced with? A bee. Out of the entire universe that they have at their fingertips, the corporation decided to splice them with Earth animals.
Yep. Or maybe the Earth animals were part of the reseeding process. So these are animals that they had. I'm trying to give them the benefit.
Don't get me wrong, but would you guys agree? What are your thoughts? What if this didn't take place on Earth? What if she was on an alien planet and it was kind of like Earth, but it was still an alien planet? And she was just in a slightly different role. And that, what would you think about the film then? Do you think it might add something to it?
Go, Paul.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't think it would have added anything. I don't think it would have detracted anything. But that just tells you that it didn't really need to be Earth either. So it could have been just any old science fiction story. It could have been even set in the farther future. It didn't seem like the time mattered either. So
no, it didn't. It wasn't really set in a time. I mean, outside of, you know, a few of the things, it's like, this could have been at any time. Now, with the casting here, Sean Bean, we're going to spoil it right now, folks. Sean Bean doesn't die.
I know.
He doesn't die in this film. I was like, oh my God.
I'm going to go get the champagne.
I'm like, thank
you. Should give it a negative right there.
Well, that puts it down on Rotten Tomatoes by 2% because Sean Bean didn't die.
Didn't die, bro.
I liked his character. And that's the thing. You could see glimpses here of some originality and some things you wish they would have went and explored more than mentioned in passing, like Stinger and Kane's relationship. You get bits and pieces of that they served together. But then we're back to Mila Kunis, who, in all honesty, she is not someone that can carry a film, and you needed a strong – I think you needed a female actress in this role that could carry a film, and Mila Kunis just didn't do it. Am I off?
Nope.
I thought she was decent. The thing is, you know, she tries what she could do with the role. It's just the fact that, like you said, she has a weak female lead – which is really disappointing because I always love a good movie with a strong female lead. She does what she could. She's decent. She does her part. It's just the fact that she's just this girl that Channing Tatum saves, which is really sad for me to say.
Yeah, it does. And you know what's funny is watching this, I got a Linda Hamm. I got like a Sarah Connor vibe for when it first started, because I'm looking at this going, okay, she's running away from people who want to kill her. She's got her young, you know, love interest protecting her. And I was hoping by the end you'd get a more badass turnaround in her character.
But she started getting there, though, at that final battle.
Kind of, but I wasn't buying it because they didn't really...
You go from a Terminator-like movie to a Twilight-like movie.
Ouch!
Wow. Oh, that's harsh there, Tony. But her character, I mean, you want an arc for her character, mm-hmm. you know, and she doesn't really grow at all during the film. At least the feeling I got, even near the end, you know, I understand she was enjoying the fact she's scrubbing toilets and she actually owns the Earth and that, and I kind of like that angle, but I guess for me, I was hoping for a little bit more character growth in hers than I got, because I still didn't feel like she was a leader of any sort by the end of the film. I mean, they had a glimpse of it when she first, when she first confronts Eddie Redmayne's character and she starts citing code to him. I loved that bit. I was like, okay, she's gotten pretty, you know, she's going toe-to-toe already with this bad guy who's kind of the main bad guy being overplayed by Eddie Redmayne. Oh, God, did he play that over the top?
He kept whispering his lines, too. It's like,
well, at one point, then he'd get upset, and then he'd just over-yell.
Oh, yeah. Like,
this is the guy who played Stephen Hawking? Really? I would have rather he just whisper the whole time. But, so the characters were up and down for me on this. There were points when I really liked them, and Channing Tatum was playing Channing Tatum or Tatum Channing. I always get his name. It sounds correct either way. I apologize. My cold is making me a little foggy, but I liked his character well enough, but that could have almost been played by anyone. There really wasn't a whole lot to his character either. I think there was more to the Stinger character of Sean Beans than there was to the Kane character. Did you get that feeling at all? Or
you want to go first, Paul, or me?
No, you can go.
Okay. I was going to say that, yeah, I agree. Anyone could play this character, but I mean, it is really cool to see Channing Tatum just doing some action sequences. I mean, the thing I have to credit the Wachowskis for, I mean, visually, this movie is spectacular. Like, even when the movie was losing me, which is for a lot of the movie, I would still have the visual effects to help me catch my attention. And I loved how they added these hover shoes on Channing Tatum. I just thought that was something pretty original for them to do with this character. And I feel like out of all the characters, he was the most interesting character. And it's kind of sad to say, but he was a stronger character than Mila Kunis's character, because she's the main lead and you want to root for her. That's all like, oh, I'm rooting more for the guy with the wolf ears than the girl who scrubs toilets.
Wow, Paul?
I agree with that. I found that the crew of the Aegis was much more interesting, though, than
Thank
all
you.
Of those. Yes.
Thank you. And that's, I think that goes along with what Tony's saying with the Wachowskis, is they do really good world building and visuals. They're top notch. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you right now. Even I was the same way. Even when this film, when I was really not invested in any of the characters, I completely dug the visuals, the production design, the interesting ships they came up with. The freaking lizard dudes with wings were just cool.
Yeah.
I loved them. I don't know why, but I just loved them. Maybe it was because of my Wing Commander days. And
oh, yeah.
Seeing them makes me want to see the Kilrathi.
Well, not just that, but they have interesting character designs to them.
Yeah. Well, and so does their technology, too.
Yep.
That's what And I think that's what got me the most with this film, was I saw the potential there to be a really good, epic sci-fi film. You know, you had potential there to do stuff differently. But they fell back on a number of things, and then it almost felt like they were trying to do too much.
I think that's the trend that they got into once they started making the Matrix trilogy. I think when they made the Matrix, they were like, well, they could end the movie there and everyone would be happy and that would be the end of it. But I think when they made this film, I think they wanted to make it bigger, like they were going to continue it. And because of that, the first film didn't do as well as it could have.
Yeah. Would you agree with that, Tony? Or?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I mean, I dug the technology in this movie, you know, and the idea that they have this harvesting that makes them regenerate, and that's the currency, is the fact that you have these planets harvested, and then these crystals are processed, and it makes the rich stay young for a longer time.
It's the ultimate commodity, man.
And when you do look at the Wachowskis' other films like Cloud Atlas, Speed Racer, The Matrix, you know visually they're going to give you at least a little visual experience.
Well, and Cloud Atlas wasn't 100% them. And me personally, I love that movie, but we won't go down
there. Yeah,
me
too.
But for me, it was just I saw the potential there, mm-hmm. you know, for so much more. And maybe, you know, it feels bad that they wrote this probably for a setup to try to make a sequel, you know, because that whole section in like the middle where Mia Kunis's character, Jupiter, aptly named, introduced, you know, first to the daughter, and she meets all three Abraxas. I liked those scenes. We learned about how the world worked, and you got a little bit of class warfare in there. You know, similar to Kingsman. Kingsman had an underlying subtext of class warfare, and here you had the same, where the rich could harvest entire planets. They kill the lower lives, if you will, so that they can live forever. And I loved that theme, and I loved that building up, but they didn't go much where with it. You know, it's like, here's this great idea, here we go. Back to the love story, back to Mila Kunis, you know, trying to quip something witty.
I totally agree. You know, you have this cool concept, and you know, it's from the Wachowskis. Their previous film was Cloud Atlas, and I agree with you, Mark, I love Cloud Atlas. So, you know, with their previous film being Cloud Atlas and this next film, you're expecting something grander. With a cool concept like this, you're going to be like, yes, I'm going to get a fucking badass Wachowski's movie. I am ready. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be epic. And then you watch the movie and you go,
The love story seemed to take to almost lower it, wouldn't you say, Paul?
I definitely agree. I did not like it. It seemed very pushed. Like, they tried to make it happen. There wasn't that much chemistry between the two. So,
not at all.
And I could tell my audience didn't like the whole romance dovey either. Because once Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum kiss, I heard some,
It was a rather awkward kiss.
I wasn't the only one that was like that. I was not the only one.
Oh, that was an awkward kiss, too. I'm like, really? I feel no passion here whatsoever. I just, you know, and I agree. The Aegis. I love the idea of the Aegis.
Yes.
Those guys, I wanted to see a movie about them. I wanted to follow that crew with the elephant-faced guy. And
definitely.
You never know. Maybe we'll get a Jupiter Ascending spinoff movie.
Because
that would be nice.
I would love to see the Aegis with Sean Bean in an adventure. I would see that because I like the cast. I like who they picked for the captain. I like the mixture of the crew. Though here, where Star Trek had all the aliens differ from the bridge of their nose, here people seem to differ from the size of their ears.
Yes.
All the aliens had different ears if they weren't Sims, except for the one elephant face guy who was, I'm like, he's an elephant face guy, an alien. We have an entire universe, and we have an elephant face guy. You know,
if someone from Hollywood is listening to this somehow, please take notes from this guy. He knows what he's talking about. Grab your paper, grab your pen, and take every note of what he's saying right now.
Thanks, Tony. I mean, I guess for me, being a sci-fi junkie, I like true sci-fi. You know, you can have elements, Earth-like elements in it. But you look at this film and you go, it doesn't have to be Earth. They don't have to be aliens spliced with Earth-like creatures. The way they set up that world and the visuals, it could be anywhere. It could be any planet. And I think by doing Earth, they felt like they needed to because they didn't give the audience enough credit. And that's the problem with Hollywood. And like you said, the romance didn't need to be in there at all. You look at the scenes they have with her and Kane. Like you said, Paul, they were forced. Mm-hmm. And if you cut those out, you don't take any away from the main plot and the main threat and the main growth of the character. Now, one final thing with this film. I'm sorry, but some of these scenes, they pulled, I think, from other sci-fi films. Did it feel like they ripped off some of this? I mean, that wedding scene. Paul, help me out here. Flash Gordon wedding.
Yes, definitely, yes. Because you even had the ship coming toward him, the Ajax like ship.
Now that I'm looking back from that movie, I kind of see the resemblance now. That didn't pop into my head now, but now it just did.
Oh, when I watched that wedding scene, I was waiting for the Queen guitar playing the wedding march, and I was waiting for the ding. And I was waiting when she put her wrist on the pad to say, I do not. And then you got the hero ship flying towards them as the wedding's happening. I'm like going, oh my God, they ripped off Flash Gordon.
That's also, but that's kind of the Wachowski style. They take elements of things that they love and then they kind of slam them together, shake it up, and then roll it and see what comes out of it.
Now let's jump back.
Okay.
25 years. This film comes out 25 years ago. I think it's a hit.
Yes.
I think it's a hit. The minute I watch this film, 15 minutes in, I'm going, oh my God, they're making a cheesy 80s sci-fi film. Because that's what it was, a big budget, but it's a cheesy 80s sci-fi movie. Like I said, the wedding seemed very similar to Flash Gordon. You know, the whole...
had elements of Dune in it, too, with the...
Dune with the spice. Yeah. He who controls the crystals controls the universe.
Exactly.
And let's not forget the ha-ha moment when they're going through the bureaucracy of her claiming her title. Tell me that wasn't ripped from Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It was like the greatest hits of scenes from other sci-fi films mashed into here, which, again, if you take it like that, it's okay. And for me, I didn't hate on the film, but it didn't stick with me either. And mostly it was because I saw the potential there. And they didn't take it. They had a chance to do something different. They had a chance to break some ground and take some chances. But to me, it felt like they didn't. Paul, what would you say?
Except for the gene genetic engineering and all that gene stuff, I would definitely... That was the only thing that I thought was original in this film. Everything else was borrowed.
Paul, what about... I mean, Tony, what about you?
I mean, yeah. I totally agree with basically with what you guys are saying. You know, you have this concept. They could have done so much with it. And I did see effort. You know, I could tell they did try.
Sure.
But they tried a little too hard, just slamming in all the scenes from the wedding to, you know, trying to hit on Mila Kunis's love to Eddie Redmayne. You know, just too many things they try to cram at once.
Academy Award nominee Eddie Redmayne. Let's not. This was not an Academy Award winning performance.
My Academy Award.
Yeah, he should accept it with that whisper voice,
and then go, "I won! I won!"
Or, "Your 2 minutes are up." Ah, no, it is not.
Hey, also those lips. Damn, I have not seen lips that huge in a long time.
Yeah, there were some big lips. I mean, and it was definitely a roller coaster ride of good and bad. And what you get is what Tony said, I think, is a meh that could have been a wow. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, I think we'll weigh in on our rating here for this film. For me, it was middle of the road, so much potential. Love visuals. I'm a big visual guy. But even that couldn't save it for me. Middle of the road, middle rating, 2.5 for me out of 5. It's not worth a full price admission. Maybe a matinee. But otherwise, I'd say rate, wait for rental. Tony, what was your rating with this?
Overall, Jupiter Ascending is okay. It's not terrible. Believe it or not, I actually thought the first 45 minutes was really good. I was actually impressed with the first 45 minutes. Once they go up into space, boom, that's when the film lost me. That's when I was getting bored. But the visuals were great. Channing Tatum was a badass. Good to see Sean Bean in the movie again. But overall, it's forgettable. I got to give it a middle in the road, meh, 2 out of 4 stars.
And Paul?
I actually scored higher than you guys. I gave it a 3.4.
Wow, nice.
Oh, wow.
But it's because of the way I rate certain things. It scored really high in the technical aspects. The only thing it really failed on was sound effects for me. Everything else from prosthetics to all that technically, it scored really high. I thought the direction was still pretty good. The acting really tumbled for me.
Yeah.
But then you had certain other characters that brought it up. You got the Sean Bean character. You got the Aegis characters. So everything that was bad, like you guys said, it was brought up by something good. And so that's why ultimately it scored higher than most people would think.
No, nothing wrong with that at all. Like I said, you know, it's. I just wish it would have been better. I really do, because I love good sci-fi, especially when they go all out with the unusual designs and good production design and world building. And they got the world there, the universe building there. It just didn't take advantage of it in my
mind. But you know what I did kind of take from this film? Because, you know, I really love Matrix. I love Cloud Atlas. I even really enjoyed Speed Racer. So,
me too. Me too, Tony.
So I think a good way to look at this is that not every movie a director is going to make is going to be great. But even if they do have a film that's not as good as the others, they could kind of just take notes on what they could fix. And then whatever film they plan to do next, they could improve from this film.
You would hope they would do that. Not all the directors do that, but you would hope they would do that. Jupiter Ascending, Paul, any final thoughts?
A polished film that lost out on its potential.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And so that'll about do it. My voice is nearly going here. Thank you for putting up with it. I really wanted to do this episode because I really loved The Kingsman, and I wanted to get some people's thoughts on Jupiter Ascending because I just saw it the other day. So hope you people enjoyed the conversation. Make sure you check out the other Spoiler Room episodes. We've got a great 25th anniversary one coming up where we're going to talk Nightbreed and Frankenhooker. Guys, Paul, why don't you start? Why don't you pimp your stuff?
Okay, you can find me at forsakenfilmreviews.wordpress.com.
And Tony?
Hold on.
He's going to warm up.
Find me at facebook.com/22tigerdude, youtube.com/22tigerdude. Okay, then.
You're starting to sound like Keanu Reeves.
Twitter at TigerDude22 and Instagram at 22TigerDude. I'm sorry you have to put up with that horrible Eddie Redmayne impression.
Well, thank you so much, and you can check all our stuff out at specialmarkproductions.com. Thank you once again for putting up with me sounding like a frog. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. And remember, with the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, even with the films that are definitely spoiled.